back to Forensic Mythology. This is Crystal.
Oh, and I'm Trista.
And, it's been a long time.
Yep.
As per usual. And we have tried to record this, like, 3 times, and various things have happened. So, I was all ready for, like, several other episodes, and then I had an unexpected surgery, and then by the time I got done with all that, it was like, I didn't like any of the things I picked anymore. So, here we are a couple months out.
Awesome.
But better late than never. So, the thing that got me all excited again, was reading about this ancient civilization in Lycia. They were located in modern-day Antalya in Turkey.
Okay.
Which, side note, if you want to see some epic photos from Antalya, go check out disheveledbums.com or their Instagram page, because there's a lot of that going on.
Nice.
But when I started down this very deep rabbit hole, I was mostly just excited about the architecture and a not-so-famous goddess, or I thought she was not-so-famous. But then it kept expanding, and I ended up, like, going off on half the Greek pantheon that I never meant to do in one
episode. That's always what happens when you try to talk about any of the Greek gods.
They're so entangled.
Yep.
It's really stressful. So, there's a lot of that, so, you know, it might take a while. But also, we have some very witchy goddesses connected, so it's a whole thing.
Nice.
And, so I'm going to be talking about Leto, and you're talking about...
Hecate.
And they're related.
Nice.
So, the area of Lycia, or Lycia, I mean, I'm saying it wrong, and its inhabitants were mentioned in Hittite and ancient Egyptian texts as far back as, like, 1200 before current era, and they're pretty mysterious. In these writings, they were mentioned as being rebellious and hostile with a strong military presence. The Lycians were a seafaring people known for their fierce resistance against invaders and their well-developed democratic system.
Nice.
They were also mentioned by Herodotus as practicing a matrilineal descent. He claims that when a Lycian woman marries a slave, her children will be allowed full rights. However, if a male citizen marries a female slave, their children will be denied citizen rights. This, again, reinforces the notion that in Lycia, women were central to the society, reflected both in law and in the tracing of descent.
Hmm.
So this matters more when I'm talking about, like, their burial practices and stuff. But,
okay.
So by nature of where this area is located, literally in the center of the ancient world, it changed rulers and cultures a lot. So, like, at one point they'd be under Persian rule, and they were considered part of Greece, and they're under the rule of Alexander the Great, and they're part of the Roman Empire, and then they're part of the Ottoman Empire. And
oh, gosh.
They're in present-day Turkey, so the area has a varied mix of cultures and languages and religions, and don't worry, I'm going to get into all the Greek mythology chaos in a minute, but
okay.
That was centered in that area. But what caught my eye was the actual rock cliff tombs of the ancient Lycians. They are amazing. Like, they could be compared to, they're similar to, like, Petra in Jordan, or even Chaco Canyon in New Mexico, where, that we've already talked about, but,
okay.
Like, they're similarly carved into the mountainside. Ooh. And these were actually tombs, though. So they,
no one lived there. There was tombs.
No. They lived there in the afterlife.
Okay.
Sort of.
All right. Okay.
They were used for funerary purposes. So the most common is the rock cut tombs. The earliest examples of these are said to have been carved in the 5th century before current era, and can be found in places such as Myra and Amasia. These tombs were carved directly into the rock face, usually into a cliff, which makes them an amazing sight to behold. And I'm going to post pictures of some of the most famous ones, but...
Okay.
The Lycians believed that their deceased ancestors played a crucial role in their lives and their connection to the afterlife. The rock-hewn tombs...
Hello? You all right there?
I think I just had a stroke.
Okay.
The rock-hewn tombs were designed to honor and protect the souls of the deceased, allowing them to maintain their status and wealth in the afterlife. The elaborate and monumental nature of these tombs... Jesus Christ. Coconut again.
Don't... He's an old, stinky man.
He just has to do loud sighs like his life is so hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a hard life a pit bull lives.
So the elaborate and monumental nature of these tombs is a reflection of the importance of the individual buried within and their role within Lycian society. Their honored dead were buried in geographically high places, like cliff sides, to give them a higher location and make them closer to heaven, as they also believed that their dead were carried to the afterlife by magical winged creatures that resembled sirens.
Does that mean that, if they didn't like someone, they, like, buried them underground so they're closer to hell? Or, like, did they not
following that logic...
Did they not even, like, bury them? They just tossed them out and were like, whatever.
I have no idea.
Oh. Okay.
Is there somebody in particular you're thinking about burying so they're closer to hell?
No, I was just asking because okay. Implying that if you're more important, they'd put you higher to heaven... That implies that if you're less important...
What this is describing is more as a culture, their dead were revered, so they would bury them as high as they could. As high as they could afford, basically.
Okay.
Because people that were, like, higher up in the social status of the time had these more elaborate cliffside ones.
Okay.
But what's cool... Well, hold on. Let me finish this section.
Okie dokie.
So I just want to know, like, all I could find was that, like, there's these creatures they referred to that would, the magical creatures that resembled sirens, but they didn't have their own name or, like, what are these magical creatures?
Oh, they didn't have
the like, name? That's all it mentioned in anything I could read about it, so.
Oh.
Like, strange. I kind of like that. I hope that I get carried off to heaven by a magical winged creature that resembles a siren.
Fair enough.
I would be cool with that. So anyway, there are also sarcophagus tombs and pillar tombs located in the area, but the rock cut are the most common. The tombs are often carved like the facade of Lycian houses and usually have one or two levels, but sometimes even three. In addition, the tombs usually held more than one body, most likely of people who were related to each other. Thus, it seems that familial ties and kinship were maintained even after death. And I was reading this, like, kind of dry archaeological study from forever ago.
Yeah.
Where they were talking about the bodies that were found in each one and
mm-hmm.
their relation to each other. And, or, you know, deciphering the carvings, because it's a dead language now, the Lycian.
I always feel so sad when a language is, like, officially claimed to be dead.
Yeah, it's a bummer. You can always revive it.
Well, it's not always.
Well, no, not always, but, like, there's a lot of Native American tribes that have put a lot of effort into reviving their languages, and I think that's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, because so much is lost when a language is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reflects the way that people see the world.
And the way that they lived and all that culture and history.
Yeah.
Sad.
Well, they've been teaching Gaelic in Ireland.
Which I think is awesome. I want to learn Gaelic.
Okay, so anyways.
Is it a hard language?
I'm sure. Every language is a hard language to me. Okay, where was I?
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, so they were talking about that some of people would, like, build these tombs in life, and then they had really strict instructions, like, it was a whole legal thing for who could be buried in them after they died.
Oh.
And so, like, there was all these really specific instructions.
Okay.
And so it started to get into stuff which I didn't even think about at first, but, like... People who they would lose, like, when their first wife would die,
mm-hmm.
and then they would have a second wife. They would have, like, separate rooms and everything for them to be buried there. But their afterlife, they kind of thought it would go on as their current life. So it makes me wonder, like, which wife did you think you were going to live with?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have them both in the same afterlife house. Is this polygamy now?
I don't know.
So anyway, so besides the rock-hewn cliff tombs, why are you staring at me so intently?
I was just waiting for you to finish your sentence.
You like how I complain, like, oh my god, you're not listening, you're just looking at your phone, and then you look at me, and I'm like, oh my god, why are you looking at me?
What do you want me to do, woman?
Mom, she's looking at me.
Mamma mia.
So, anyways, there's, like, sarcophagus tombs that are just these big, like, stone, like, gigantic, coffins, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
That are above ground. But then there's these pillar ones that are, like, really weird to me. I feel like they're the weirdest one of all. Because they're a giant, like, sarcophagus, but they're up on a pillar. Like, a big stone pillar just up in the air. Which is part of the whole getting them higher up so they can be taken by winged creatures to heaven. But it's just, they're weird. I don't know.
Okay.
I just want to talk about those. I'll post a picture so you know, like, what I'm talking about. Okay, so I'm going to talk more about, like, the gods and goddesses of the area now. And Leto was, like, the goddess of Lycia. And she was the mother of Apollo and Artemis, who are much more famous than her. I didn't really know that much about her, honestly. Apollo was a particularly important god for the Lycians, as his origin is believed to be Anatolian. And Artemis was also important for Lycia, as she was considered the Anatolian sister of Apollo. Both Apollo and Artemis had cult centers in Lycia, however...
Cult centers?
Yeah, like ceremonial centers people would travel to for...
Oh, centers.
Centers.
I thought you said sinners. Like S-I-N-N-E-R-S.
Are my cult centers.
I was like, what
they
does that mean?
They do the sinning for us.
I was real confused.
Okay. I will try and speak more clearly.
Thank you.
So neither are as well attested as the goddess Leto. In Xanthus, the religious sanctuary known as Latoon appears to have been the most important for Lycians. Three temples are dedicated to Leto in this region, where the national festivals were held. Other shrines exist to Leto throughout the region, making her the most influential religious figure in Lycia. Leto was considered the goddess of motherhood and protector of children, in addition to her twins, Apollo and Artemis. Leto was the offspring of the Titans that Zeus had overthrown in his rise to power, which was also his parents.
Yeah.
So him and Leto are actually cousins. They both had Titan parents.
Okay.
What was that?
The dishwasher.
Okay.
What was that?
Sorry, everyone. But because she did not take sides in this war, she was able to continue on, like, in peace after they were overthrown. So, it's worth noting also that her niece, the daughter of her sister, was Hecate, the goddess of witchcraft and magic and the moon.
Indeed.
And so, my favorite part here, besides Trista talking about Hecate, is that some sources have Leto as the mother of the moon goddess Selene as well. So, like, everything in Greek mythology, the whole story is a shit show. And there are many different versions of everything. But Leto was said to be a goddess who accidentally caught the eye of Zeus, the man-whore of the gods. And after he impregnated her, she gave birth to Apollo, the god of music, and Artemis, the goddess of the hunt. Which, coming from a matrilineal society, is...
Oops, sorry, that was my phone. Go ahead, continue.
It's just, you know, nice to see that... You know, Apollo can be the god of music and Artemis can be goddess of the hunt. But what's interesting is that Leto seemed to have been a revered goddess locally in the area long before Greek culture kind of stamped itself on everything and made Zeus the father of...
Everyone?
All the children. 'Cause most accounts of Greek mythology have Zeus forcing himself on someone or another and being the father of everyone. Which is a whole other weird thing that I don't want to get too far into, but, like, worshipping him as king of the gods and, like, people projecting themselves on the gods they worship, and it's just creepy. Like, why would you want to worship a god that has no self-control and can't stop raping everyone?
Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now. So back to Zeus and Hera and Leto. This relationship is a little unique in that Zeus's wife Hera was said to have sent assassins after Leto and basically tortured her and made her childbirth extremely traumatic. And it's weird because Hera had a shit ton of Zeus's mistresses to deal with and didn't seem to go after them the way that she did Leto. So it could be that Leto was, like, the first one, because some accounts have, like, Zeus and Leto being together before Hera.
Oh, okay.
So there's some kind of weird jealousy there. But go after her, she did. It's like, be mad at your husband.
Yeah. Zeus is the whore here.
Yeah. So Hera banished Leto and cursed her to not be able to give birth any place under the sun. Every city would not give her sanctuary because they feared Hera, the queen of the gods. But Zeus sent Boreas, the god of the north wind, which is funny and weird that there's just, like, a god for everything. He's the god of the north wind.
Hey, don't make fun of him. He's trying his best.
No, I'm not making fun of him. It's just so random. Like, what would I be the goddess of? Some random thing.
I have no clue.
Okay, well, you can just think of anything, and it's like, there's a god of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so,
well, it's easier to, instead of just explaining something, just be like, ah.
There's a god behind
there's
that.
There's a god behind that.
Yeah, it puts order to chaos. So anyway, Zeus sent Boreas to Leto, who brought her to Poseidon. Poseidon then raised high waves over Ortygia, shielding it from the light of the sun with a water dome. It was later called the Island of Delos. There, Leto, clinging to an olive tree, gave birth to Apollo and Artemis after 4 fucking days.
Oh my gosh.
Some accounts actually say 9 or even 12 days, and she came to be associated with wolves because they apparently have long labors or are hard births, and she was said to be able to shapeshift into a she-wolf.
Oh, nice.
So anyway, Hera sent all number of monsters after Leto, like a giant python and another creature, Tityos, who were both trying to rape her, allegedly on Hera's orders, because it was said that Zeus preferred Leto. Also, the python had been told by a prophecy that he would die at the hands of Leto's son, which he did, and Tityos was punished for trying to kill Leto by having his liver constantly eaten by 2 vultures in the underworld.
Awesome.
It's like, that's really horrible.
Yeah, I love how the prophecy was like, yeah, this woman's son is gonna kill you. So then he still went to go piss off.
So, yeah, pretty horrifying that his liver is being eaten.
Yeah, but it's like the prophecy that foretold that the son was gonna kill him. So then he still went to go piss off the mother. Even though he knew that the son was gonna kill. Like, if he had just not...
If he had just stayed the fuck away, right?
He would still be alive. Mind your own business.
But also, it's like, I could see his angle because he was trying to prevent her from having him.
But that's how everything goes.
I know.
How every single prophecy is like, oh, I have to stop. I have to get to the root of this. But, like, maybe if you just, like, didn't react with, like, rage and violence, maybe the prophecy wouldn't come true.
Yeah. Maybe you set all this into motion by trying to stop it.
Exactly.
If you would have just lived your little mind in your business life, things might have turned out differently.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, anyway. It kind of seems like Zeus's brothers, Poseidon and Hades, god of the sea and god of the underworld, were both very willing to help Leto and not Hera. So I just, you know, take from that what you will. I just find it interesting. They were like, oh, God, my brother's wife. She's being crazy. We'll help his mistress. So.
Or first love, depending on what story.
Depending on which story, and there are so many. I'm trying to condense them into a coherent narrative here. So, Also, with Apollo and Artemis growing up with a single mother fighting off all manner of sketchy monster assassins, they were very close to their mother and protected her fiercely as they got older. This was inevitable, but not necessarily great, because, like in the case of Leto's friend Niobe, who was queen of somewhere, I don't remember where.
Yeah.
She was being kind of condescending about how she had 14 children and Leto only had 2. So Apollo went and killed all of her sons, and Artemis killed all of her daughters, like a bunch of homicidal psychopaths.
Jesus.
This is...
How many kids do you have now, huh?
And then it's like she went into like a deep depression, and her husband like killed himself. Like her whole family just fell apart.
Oh my gosh.
In 5 seconds, because they were like, oh, you want to talk crap to our mom? They had a chip on their shoulder, for sure. So, it's kind of... Everyone's kind of a absolute psychopath in Greek mythology. It's just... It's a whole vibe.
Yeah.
There's also a tale about when Leto was wandering the Earth after giving birth to Apollo and Artemis. She attempted to drink water from a pond in Lycia, or a well, or something like that. And the peasants there refused to allow her to do so by stirring the mud at the bottom of the pond.
Which is such a dick move.
It really is a dick move. It's like, it's one person who's clearly, like, traveled some distance.
Yeah. So,
you can't let them have a drink of your pond water? Anyways, it was a dick move. But Leto turned them into frogs for their inhospitality, forever doomed to swim in the murky waters of ponds and rivers. So maybe she was a bit of an overreactor. But I still think she was pretty cool. Plus, yeah. She was the aunt of the goddess of witchcraft, and possibly the mother of the moon goddess, so I bet there was some wild stuff going on.
Yeah.
Besides turning people into frogs. It is interesting, though, because in several texts, she's referred to as being extremely kind. One text states, Leto was always mild, kind to men and the deathless gods, mild from the beginning, the gentlest goddess in all Olympus. And maybe that's true when you consider all the other goddesses in Olympus.
Yeah.
In another story, she was saved by Orion as he was killed by a giant scorpion, so Leto placed him among the stars as the constellation.
Aww.
She was also written about in the Trojan War. There's also a ceremony called... Oh, Jesus. I should have looked this up. Ecdysia?
Okay.
Which means stripping down or to undress, which is a ritual. Okay. It's not exactly how it sounds. It's a ritual involving sacred ceremonies and celebrations at Phaistos, Crete, which were held in honor of Leto. And oh, nice. It's because of this legend, which is about the story of Galatia, daughter of Evrytios, and wife of Lambros, because her husband had warned her that if she gave birth to a daughter, he would kill her.
Oh.
He would kill the child. So Galatia, wanting to save her daughter, was forced to conceal the child's gender and raise her as a boy, naming her Leucippus.
Okay.
But the young girl grew up to be very beautiful, and it was impossible to hide her gender as she got older. So Galatia desperately resorted as a supplicant to the sacred temple of Leto and asked her to transform her daughter to a son in order to stay alive. The goddess felt sorry for her and accepted her prayers. Thus, the young girl abdicated her maiden veil and by Leto's divine intervention was transformed into a man. Thus, the feast Ecdysia was named after the incident.
Oh.
And finally, there is one great quote of Leto just talking shit to Hera.
Okay.
Where she sarcastically says that not all goddesses can be blessed to be the mother of gods like Hephaestus, which was Hera's son. And she calmly tells Hera that she might feel confident belittling everyone due to her status as queen of the gods and as wife of Zeus, but she'll cry and sob all the same the next time that he shall abandon her for the love of some mortal woman.
Oh, damn.
I was like, burn. So, the end. And also, I need to go see the rock tombs in Myra. Not a want, a need. Like, they're so cool.
All right. I'll keep that in mind.
I'm going to be talking about Hecate, who is the goddess of boundaries, the new moon, ghosts, necromancy, transitions, magic, and crossroads.
All kinds of cool things.
Yep. And other things she's associated with are graves, night, light, protection from witchcraft, as well as knowledge about various herbs and or... herbs. Various herbs.
Good job.
And or poisonous plants. And, fun fact, it said that she's favors garlic and is often associated with belladonna.
Oh, me too, on both counts.
You're often associated with belladonna. I'm not associated
with belladonna, but garlic, it's my jam.
Okay.
I'm not regularly poisoning people with belladonna.
Okay.
I mean, it's crossed my mind.
Hecate is a goddess in ancient Greek religion and was most likely derived from the Carians, hope I said that right, which were ancient inhabitants in Caria in southwest Anatolia.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So same general area.
Mm-hmm. Usually depicted holding torches, snakes, or a key, she is also normally accompanied by dogs and in some time periods was described as being triple-bodied. Britannica writes, Hecate was represented as a single-formed, clad in... What? Sorry, Hecate was represented as single-formed, clad in a long robe, holding burning torches. In later representations, she was triple-formed, with three bodies standing back-to-back, probably so that she could look in all directions at once from the crossroads. She was accompanied by packs of barking dogs. What?
That would be you.
But... triple-bodied, standing in the crossroads with my pack of barking dogs.
Just the pack of barking dogs. The triple-body thing really stresses me out. I don't like it.
Okay.
How does she lay down?
I don't know. She's a goddess.
She doesn't need sleep.
I don't know.
Okay.
And then in Restless Dead by Sarah Johnston, she explains the significance of the dogs here. It's been claimed that her, Hecate, association with dogs is suggested of her connection with birth, for the dog was sacred to birth goddesses. Images of her attended by a dog are also found at times when she is shown as in her role as mother goddess of child, and when she is depicted alongside the god Hermes and the goddess Cybele in reliefs. Later on, though, the symbols of the dog came to be seen as restless spirits or demons that followed her. Though Hecate, who looks completely friendly in many pieces of ancient art, suggests that its original significance was positive and thus likelier to have arisen from the dog's connections with birth than the dog's underworld associations.
It's kind of like with Leto and her wolf connection.
Yeah, because Hecate, as I'll talk about later, is also associated with the underworld. And one connection is that, like, she has, like, dogs, like, that's... kind of one of her symbols. And
she has
then,
some hellhounds.
Yeah, and then Cerberus guards the gates of mm-hmm. hell. So it's like there's that connection because they're both dogs. Or, I don't, anyways, whatever. Her first appearance in literature was in Hesiod, hope I said that right, who was a Greek poet active from 750 to 650 BCE. Theogony? I think that's how I say it. Which is a large synthesis of the extremely diverse local Greek traditions as well as gods. And he wrote about the origin of the origins of the gods and goddesses and how they came to be. He said that Hecate was of great honor who had many domains in the sky, earth, and sea. And he explains that she is the daughter of the Titan Perseus and the nymph Astrea. Interestingly enough, she has an impressive following among the witches of Thessaly, which, as Wikipedia states...
She does have an impressive following among the witches of everywhere.
Okay.
Just saying.
Thessaly is a traditional geographic and modern administrative region of Greece, comprising most of the ancient region of the same name. Before the Greek Dark Ages, Thessaly was known as Aeolia. Don't!
I'm sorry, I'm just as bad.
And appears thus in Homer's Odyssey. So, Thessaly is named after an ancient Greek tribe named Thessaly, I believe. Unfortunately, the meaning of this name is unknown, but some people say it could mean victory of Thessaly. Robert S. P. Beeks, a Dutch linguist, says the name predates Greek times.
And it's also some books of the Bible.
Yep. Thessalonians. And so the witches of Thessaly were female astrologers that were often seen to be sorceresses, commonly said to be adept at drawing out the moon and or hiding it, though many scholars say today that they are more, that they were just likely able to predict the moon cycle as well as the weather. And these witches also were very good at using herbs, and they were active from the 3rd to 1st century BCE.
Well, it's like, I know that in the... I've interrupted you before when we tried to record this.
Yeah.
Because it's funny to think about that they were, like, known as these sorceresses that could draw out the moon. And really, they just understood, like, the cycle of the moon that happened every month.
Yeah.
And it was probably directly related to their own monthly cycle. So they were just like, oh, it's that time. We better go draw out the moon again.
Yep.
And everyone was like, holy shit, they can draw out the moon.
Holy crap, guys. So, many of her followers, many of Hecate's followers, described her as a rotting goddess who has to wear a mask when she visits the gods in heaven. And that little quote was from The Rotting Goddess, The Origins of the Witch in Classical Antiquities, Demonization of Fertility Religion by Jacob Rabinowitz.
Okay.
So... Putting cool. credit where credit's due.
Do you have that book?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sounds interesting, though. I might get it.
Yeah, we should get it.
But another fun fact is that in the Argonautica, an epic Greek poem of which was written by Apollonius Rhodius, it states that Medusa was taught by Hecate, and I quote, "I have mentioned to you before a certain young girl whom Hecate, daughter of Perseus, has taught to work in drugs."
Not the drugs.
It's also said that she witnessed the abduction of Persephone, Demeter's daughter, and went to look for her in hell, torch in hand. And this is one of the reasons she's often regarded as a goddess of the underworld. In some artworks, she is shown to be guiding Persephone back to the overworld with Hermes, god of roads and travelers, along with other things. One of the symbols she is associated with, keys, is highly important here, as she is the holder of the keys that unlock the gates between realms. And not unlike Hermes, Hecate is a guardian of not just roads, but any and all journeys, including the journey to the afterlife. And then in 5th century BCE, she became closely associated with ghosts. Many scholars assume that's so because of confusion or conflict with the Thessalian goddess Enodia. And Enodia is the goddess of ghosts, roads...
Enodia? I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, there was barely any information on her. It was kind of hard to find. But she is the goddess of ghosts, roads, protection, purification, cities, and cemeteries. And Wikipedia, which was one of the only places I could find stuff about her, writes that she was paired with Zeus in a cult and sometimes shared sanctuaries with him. And Enodia was primarily worshipped in ancient Thessaly and was well known in the Hellenistic Macedonia.
Okay.
So, since Hecate is also a goddess of crossroad paths, etc., she was often referred to as a liminal goddess because she wasn't here or there. And so...
I like that. That's fun.
Yeah. And here's a quote. Hecate's importance to Byzantium? Jesus, I was like, that's not how I say that.
Byzantium. I didn't even know what you were saying at first, but you looked a little like... What did I just say?
I was shocked. Anyways, how do I say it again? I'm blanking. Byzantium was above all as a deity of protection. When Philip of Macedon was about to attack the city,
Alexander the Great.
According to the legend, she alerted the townspeople with her ever-present torches and with her pack of dogs, which served as her constant companions.
Nice.
So, yeah, and as for being a goddess of the moon, evidence for this comes fairly late, as there is no artwork or really any literary work connecting her to the moon before the Roman period.
But it's just the witchy people projecting on. Kind of. We like her and we like the moon, so we're going to say they're the same.
Yeah, but in the Homeric, H-Y-M-N, is that how I say it? Heim.
You sounded like the seagulls on Nemo.
Hey, I'm trying my best. Him. Homeric hymn by anonymous writers, the hymn to Demeter implies Hecate's ability as a moon goddess. And then in the lost play The Root Cutters, it says, O sun, our lord, and sacred fire, the spear of Hecate of the Rhodes, which she carries as she attends her mistress in the sky. And the moon goddess Selene was also commonly identified with Hecate.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, do you have something to say?
No.
Oh, you just breathed in like a certain way, and I was like, oh, she's about to say something.
I feel like they're all kind of similar in, like, Artemis, Selene, and Hecate. They're all kind of just associated.
But Hecate has significant weight as a household deity, as shrines were often placed in doorways to temples, homes, and cities. Shrines on three-way crossroads were left food offerings at every new moon to protect from spirits and other such evils.
Nice.
And
new moons, man.
Yeah.
People think that bad things happen on the full moons.
Yeah.
But as somebody who's regularly on call, I will tell you.
So it's the new moon. It's
always the new moon. Full moons, it's fine. Not too much goes awry, but bad things, man.
So the earliest evidence of her worship was in 6th century BCE, where a small terracotta statue was found with Hecate in its inscription. Her cult, though, was established in Athens around 430 BCE, and then I literally just asked you for the pronunciation.
Him?
No, the one before that.
Byzantium?
There we go. In Byzantium, she was greatly popular and was known as Hecate Lampadephoros.
Okay. What is Lampadephoros?
I probably butchered that, but she was also known, she was because the story of like her warning the city with like her lanterns, she was like another, like depending on where you were, she was more associated with one thing than the other. Like she might be more of a goddess of the underworld or whatever, but here it was more, she was just the goddess of like lamps.
She was the protector of the city with her lamps.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
And that's all I got.
Nice.
Yep.
I like it. And, yeah. I don't know what I was going to say. Well, we do have other things that are hopefully coming, as long as there's no, like, emergency surgeries or various other things.
Yep.
But, thanks for listening after us being gone for a very long time again. It's how we roll.
Yeah.
And you can follow us on... Jesus, Eva. Are you serious? You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook or visit our website at forensicmythology.com or email us at forensicmythology@gmail.com.
All right.
And that's it.
Adios.
Bye.